Ben Gordon is a physiotherapist in the United States who works remotely for a primary care organization called Nice Healthcare and has worked with telehealth startups since 2019. He does web development on the side and wants to explore how to use AI to assist clinicians in remote work environments. He graduated from the MGH Institute of Health Professions in 2020 and has a deep interest in learning about how physiotherapists can evolve with new tools and care models. We really enjoyed this conversation with Ben, and I hope you do too.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us, Ben. We've been wanting to chat for a while and talk about your experiences with remote patient management and just some of the really interesting things that you've been doing in practice. And, you know, Ben and I, we think a lot about physiotherapy education, and I thought it would be useful to get some of your insights into remote management for us to think a little bit about how we are looking at professional education and moving forward and how we prepare graduates for that kind of new world of work.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on, Ben and Michael. I think remote management is obviously going to explode at some point. I think, you know, we had COVID, so it was a really interesting experiment. I think things have definitely reverted back to the mean there. You know, most people are having care in person, but remote management, I think, is it really does flip the idea of physical therapy on its head a little bit. At least when I was in school, I think there was definitely more of a focus on more hands-on approaches, or at least being in person. And I think that affords some constraints that you don't have when you're in person. In remote care. And so what I find really interesting about remote care is that the increased in constraints actually really force you to focus in on the essence of what we're doing. And that has been something that's really, I would say, improved my practice. So a lot to jump off there. And I think, you know, there's a huge future there. But to be completely honest, I still think that in-person and remote are going to be, you know, the future. It's not one or the other.
And just for sort of my interest, I know that you guys have sort of spoken before, but could you just kind of flesh out a little bit about your practice? So is this kind of telehealth way of working? Yeah. Is that entirely how you work? Is it part of your job? Like, what's the kind of patient case that we're talking here? And then we can sort of go from there, but it might be good. Just to get that sort of baseline. Yeah.
Probably good to do a little intro before cutting deep right away. I am a physio. I'm remote only, and I have actually never worked in person in an orthopedic practice. I did work in a hospital for 1 year, but I may be one of the first physios to have never worked in person and only have a remote job and in orthopedics. And so I've been a physio for 3 years. I graduated, I think it was 2021, and in school, I became very interested in technology, and then COVID happened and I joined a startup, and that's kind of how I ended up at this position. And what I do now is remote physio full time. But I think what's interesting about the model is that I'm in primary care. So I work with mental health practitioners, licensed social workers, psychologists, and a medical team. So physician assistants and nurse practitioners. So kind of the big three: PT, mental health, the medical team. It's an interesting model that I think has really benefited the patients from my point of view, and has opened my eyes to like where healthcare might be going. Obviously, you know, these things are done in person, but I think this model is relatively unique. So it's been really interesting so far.
Can you tell us a little bit about like what that looks like in practical terms? Do you have like a bespoke platform that patients are on, or are you just using Zoom? So, you know, Just kind of flesh out a little bit what it looks like, you know, when your day starts. What is it? You sit down in front of a laptop and you've got a workload that's allocated. You know, what does it look like in operational terms?
That's a great question. So we have our own EMR. You know, looking at other EMRs, do we build our own? But we have our own, you know, Zoom service, right? Just a video service. And beyond that, we don't have many other tools, which again provides an interesting constraint. So really all we have is just this video platform and an EMR messaging. So patients can message us. So a typical day, I have a schedule. You know, we integrate with like G Suite, you know, Google tools, things like that. And, patients will be scheduled and I'll see patients. Obviously we get a little bit of a, if someone's seen them before, we get a little bit of a history, subjective, why they're being referred. We now have patients able to see us directly, so we may not know a whole lot other than like the chief complaint. And yeah, I'll hop on a video call. We usually have about 60 minutes and can really take as many sessions as needed to reach their goals. So an actual session, of course, is like really driven by those goals. So we really try to get that immediately, and that kind of sets the plan of care. And then we have follow-ups. Oftentimes they're, you know, they could be the same week, they could be weekly, sometimes it's monthly for some people. So really fortunate to have that flexibility.
And so what kind of drives people towards, you know, your service? Have they been referred in specifically because this is a telehealth service? Like, are they choosing between accessing that and accessing it and in person, and like it, they have a choice? Is this an insurance-led yeah. kind of model, I'm assuming, because obviously there may be differences between how healthcare is organized for yourself and for us here in the UK?
Yeah, I'd be wondering the same then. It's obviously very different in America. So we're doing employer-based care. So if you're an employee at like an auto shop, your employer, the auto shop, is going to give you our service. It's called Nice Healthcare. You get pretty much, they're paying for it. You get PT, mental health, you know, medical care for free. It's just that the employer is paying for it. Now, the reason that's a big deal, at least in America, is obviously insurance premiums are going through the roof. So if you use that insurance less, which is where we come in, your premiums should be going down over time. And that's the idea behind where we help people save. So basically, by allowing your employees to use this, it also keeps people at a job, which is, I think, very messed up. But it is kind of the model. People do stay at their job for Nice Healthcare, which I find really interesting. It is a way to avoid going through the normal insurance-based healthcare system. And it's free, and people utilize it a pretty good amount, which is great.
I'm interested in kind of the scale of the company. Like, you're remote only. So is there, other than kind of regulatory issues, you know, could you employ me as a physiotherapist based in the UK? Could you see patients based in India? Like, I was just wondering, now that you're kind of talking about it, I don't really see, other than some administrative issues, why it wouldn't be possible to really scale a model like this to, you know, quite a big number.
I think this idea of scale, I definitely want to talk about more. But to answer your question, yes, we could scale to the UK, to India, anywhere. But there's regulatory issues. There are, you know, markets. We don't understand those markets. So there's huge roadblocks to get there. But there's simply nothing stopping us because of the technology. And quite honestly, it's innovative in the sense that, you know, people can see us from their workplace or their home. But it's also not, because we don't really have many different tools. We're basically doing the same thing that would be happening in person. So I find that people really, really appreciate the ability to just pick up their phone, you know, have the convenience of having, you know, a doctor basically in their pocket. And yeah, I think that also changes things, especially from the physiotherapy perspective, because people have to take a more active approach in their care, right? You're not coming to me and I'm not giving you healthcare. We're kind of working together. I think it kind of changes the therapeutic relationship a little bit. Not saying that doesn't happen in person, but I think it's different.
But my clinical background was working in sort of a community neuro sort of rehabilitation service, and some of that involved going into people's homes, and some of that involved people coming into sort of outpatient clinics, you know, in the rehab center. And it always really struck me how changing the environment really had an impact on, you know, every aspect of that interaction, just the time that people were happy to spend, you know, the difference between someone who's coming to see you and kind of wants to get out of there, you know, broadly speaking, as quick as they can with whatever needs to be done, having been done, versus you going in someone's home and it's like, well, you're going to stop, like have a cup of tea, like, oh, we've got some food in the kitchen. Do you want some of that? Let's bring that out. Well, you know, the scope of the conversations that you have, obviously, you know, from that rehab aspect, just the insight you get into someone's life is obviously so much deeper by being in the place where they spend all their time. And so you have much more realistic conversations then about, you know, what their goals are, how you're actually going to implement them. And so I can really see that, you know, again, just changing the environment, the place that they're in and their comfort with it, it's not someone coming onto your patch, do you know what I mean, where you control the environment and the time and every aspect of it, and it's a bit more a meeting of equals in some way. I don't know, it feels like it kind of would be online, particularly for someone who's quite comfortable kind of doing online meetings and things as part of that job. I don't know, that might not be the case with people you see, but in fact for often people you might be encountering people who are more comfortable spending time online doing things than the physical therapist might be, and so it can invert some of those power dynamics potentially. I don't know.
Ben, that's such an interesting point. I want to kind of learn more about your experience going into people's homes, but I find the entire reason they're coming to us is because something in their life is not aligned. So we're basically trying to help them realize what's relevant to get back to that goal. And being in the environments you're in is going to obviously help you get to those goals much easier. It also helps with this idea that, like, in order to get better, we have to change a habit, basically a behavior of some sort. It's not just a very specific muscle that we have to target. There's something bigger going on. Being in people's homes really changes that, because we can think outside the box of little things that we can integrate into the plan of care. I'll give you a great example of this. I had a patient who had a shoulder injury, and through talking with them, I realized that this was preventing them from picking up their granddaughter. And, you know, would never have thought of somehow introducing that into the plan of care. But there was a point where we actually said, I actually want you to pick up your granddaughter for PT a certain amount of times per week, you know, kind of gradually getting back to that idea of helping her play on the monkey bars on the playground. And would not have known that if I wasn't in her home with her granddaughter or had not asked the right question. So I think, yeah, you're spot on. It brings out something different, a different almost lens. And I'm curious, what are some differences you've noticed being in someone's home versus kind of in the clinic, that power dynamic? Because I do think that's kind of touching on it.
Yeah, I think as I say, there's the kind of element of just how open people are to a conversation, who owns the conversation, the pace of it, the time that someone will spend. I think in the clinic, it's like, in general, someone's going to come in and they're going to stay quiet unless you're asking a question, and then they're going to answer that question. And just the nature of kind of coming into someone's home, the start point of that conversation is a little bit different. You don't march in and sort of start shooting questions at someone straight off.
Right.
You know, there's you've got to kind of I don't know, sort of navigate the journey from the front door into the living room, and you know, and then it's like, oh, and how's it? So you get into some small talk that you might not always have, you know, in those other spaces in the same way. And then, just as I say, I think it's about the comfort of it. So some of it's about the caseload. I think it was, you know, it's working with often people with long-term conditions, so you kind of get to know that person over a period of time. But I think there's that conversation. And then in terms of, as you say, the getting into the sort of goals and the specifics, I think you just, as a physio, you can't kid yourself that someone's going to be doing something just because you've advised them to do it when you're in that home, you know. So the fact that in the clinic you could get someone to do the exercise on the plinth, and you've raised up to the right height, and you know, everything's yep, perfect, and you've got the equipment out, and it's like, this is how we're going to do it. Whereas when you're in someone's home and you're like, well, I think we need to, you know, you're telling me this is a problem. Okay, well, let's have a look at your particular, I don't know, kitchen worktop, right? Or like the washing machine that you told me you can't get down to get stuff out of. You know, we don't have to mock it up. Like, I can just look at the actual thing. And then when I'm suggesting that we do something, I can't just kind of give you this as an abstract kind of conceptual exercise to do. Like, we need to see where you're going to do it. So would you do it here? Or no, actually that looks awful. don't do that. You know, right. Let's think about where else could we do it? Like, what could we use to adapt it in some way or to make it different? So I think it strips away the, yeah, I don't know. I've not really thought this through before, but I think it's often easy. And I get this when we're sort of talking about it with, students now, it's so easy to kid yourself, you know, that like, in theory, you've given someone like some good advice that might be supported by evidence, and you've given them some things that, that they can go and do. And it's really easy to feel you've ticked the box and like, that's it now, you know, that like I've done my bit and it's on them and off they can go to do it. And I think having the experience of working certainly in the community, and it may well be, it'd be interesting if you feel the same with your work, it just strips that away a little bit more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that context is so important because, you know, we're not just providing physical therapy. I mean, there's so many dimensions to one's life, and this might be, you know, their calf issue might not be the issue. It's just where it's showing up. And I think kind of really understanding that is easier to do when you're in someone's home and see all the context and really obviously see them, like you said, it's just kind of like human to human. I think people really pick up on that. It's so interesting.
I want to just ask about this idea of kind of space and how you said earlier, Ben, how it changes the agency. It gives people kind of a greater feeling of control. There's a greater kind of self-regulated component. And other Ben, like you were just talking about your own personal experience, and I had that as well. I would go into patients' homes and like I'm asking for permission to sit on the couch. Like, you know, is it okay if I sit here? Is it okay if I do this? And so that dynamic changes completely. But now there's something interesting about online in that we're both occupying a third space. Yeah. You're sitting in your lounge. I'm sitting in my office, but you know, where we interact, like, are we in your house or are we in my office? Because I'm still in my office, but we're kind of in this weird space where, you know, even social norms are different. And so I just wanted to know, like, in your experience with working with patients remotely, is there that kind of change in agency? Because, you know, they are still in their home, but they don't have to take you into the kitchen. You know, they can stay sitting in that spot. Like, do you say to them, no, I want you to take me to the kitchen. Show me around your house. Set up your phone on the bookshelf so that I can actually watch you doing something. So do you find yourself giving them instruction? How well do they respond to that? Like, because now you're not in their home, but you are in their home, kind of. I'm just interested in some of those ideas and whether or not that's kind of come up in any of the work that you've done.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'd say less so. So yes, when I need to do a quick movement screen, or if, you know, if I need to see, you know, range of motion, for example, right? Just a quick screen, because I can't do it that precisely. Yeah, I have them put down their phone and stuff. Do I ask to go into the kitchen and other areas? Absolutely not. Almost never. And I'd say what guides almost everything I do is really trying to understand, why are they here? I mean, why did they, you know, literally want to reach out to someone. And I think sometimes people don't even know that truly. You know, yes, their hip hurts, but I think there's a bigger issue there, which is a kind of a lack of control. And this comes back to agency. And this is where I think like the physiotherapy is interesting and kind of like to Dave Nichols' point of like the flattening of the profession. Like, we're doing what a lot of other professions are doing, which is basically just helping people realize what's relevant to fix their issue. And I think that is also a jumpstart into not just fixing an issue, but kind of going in a certain direction. So I think when it comes down to like asking people to do things, their goals drive everything. And so I think the ability to ask really good questions is so important, just as it is in the clinic. But I think the clinic affords a different type of approach, right? You can feel the shoulder and you can watch them do an exercise. You can feel their shoulder blade while doing something. And without that, it's just, it forces you to focus on, I think, what's more important, which is their entire context. Because that is going to drive everything. It's the right foundation. Not saying that can't happen in person. I just think it has to happen virtually, remotely.
Do you feel that? Sometimes, and I certainly, this is a comment that a student said this week. They were talking about going on placement. I thought, I kind of recognised that from practice of feeling like you got time pressured, you know, and so you're trying to ask all the questions. This was in a session we were sort of talking about persistent pain and sort of more cognitive behavioural approaches to that and how you might assess those. And they're like, oh yeah, there's all these questions and all these. you know, things that, that we need to ask. And, you know, you're kind of telling me to have this open, you know, sort of wide ranging conversation that's really getting a sense of, you know, how someone thinks about things and their beliefs and how this impacts everything. And they're like, but I know on placement, I'm going to have like 20 minutes that I've got to do all the subjective. Yeah. And then I need to do something. You know, there's this sense of like, but at that point, I've not even done anything. You know, I haven't even, right. not even laying hands on, you know, and so I then need to do something before the end. And so that time, because you are in the clinic, there is a feeling that you've got to have done all of these things. So it maybe limits your ability to spend the time on the conversation, because the expectation on sort of both parts is that, you know, we'll also move on to something where I'm going to, you know, look at movement in this particular way. And I wondered if you felt that was different, you know, do you still feel like a pressure within the session? And it sounds like you've got, you know, quite a nice amount of time, which is great. That makes a difference, right? But do you have the time and do you feel the pressure in the session to also get to the movement screen? Or is it a bit easier online to kind of not have to, you know, if we don't get there, we haven't got there, but that's fine, because what we've done is a conversation and the expectations are slightly different.
That's such a good question. I need to process that. I think it's definitely different. I think the unfortunate truth, especially, you know, in the US with insurance, and I'm sure it's pretty similar in the UK and elsewhere. The time to see a patient is going down. It's you have less time and you have to follow more rules and all these things. And I think that really puts limits on practice. From my own experience, I think that it's more important to drive, to really help them understand that you're trying to understand them, because this is like a dynamic situation here, because it really is a working together. I'm trying to model you as a patient. And so your job should actually be to kind of try to model me. And I think there's a meeting there that I think is so hard to achieve. But once you achieve it, that's where you can really kind of jump off and start to kind of be on the same page about things. So taking the time to do that, I think, is worth it. But I also understand that can't happen in 20 minutes. For me, it usually, you know, we do a subjective is usually like 5 to 10 minutes. It's actually not that long. You know, oftentimes when we're doing movements, yes, we're still talking about things, and, you know, I'll revisit things because we have that extra hour. But I think 20 minutes is not enough. But if I were in that position, I would really want to understand that, what's the bigger thing here? What's the thing beyond just this, what pain is presenting? Let's give you these, we call them like micro steps, right? Just the bare minimum thing to do until we meet next time. People like that way more, because it's just a few things you have to do. It's easier to get into a habit. So that's kind of my approach, is because I have the time, I can really get the full picture. If I didn't have the time, it would be try to get the most important thing, the end goal, but also end them with just a few things that are, of course, are not going to hurt them, that they can take away with, that can start practicing. And then that's like an extended exam, because next time you see them, you're essentially just building off that information. I think everything is data and information, versus just kind of having a specific way to do something, I think, is too rigid. So I don't know if that answered. That was a really good question, though.
I mean, I don't know. Well, I think my questions are often slightly wobbly. So apologies for that. I'll try and make this one shorter. So, because one of the things that you said was that you thought the importance of being able to ask questions well, that's like a, you know, that's a really important currency that we have, that we'd be able to do. So do you feel like the sorts of questions that you ask are different online, or is it the way that you ask them, or like what you know, or is it just that you feel more able to ask them? Like what's the thing that changes with telehealth, do you think?
I don't think there's much, to be honest. I don't think there's much. I think it's the constraint. I think I'm not able to put my hands on you. I cannot feel anything. I have no choice but to ask these questions, or else all we're doing is just, I'm just watching you move, and there's no context behind why you're moving that way. So that's kind of my short answer. What are your thoughts on that? I don't know.
I'll come in quickly. You recommended a book to me a while ago called A Beautiful Question, A More Beautiful Question. And I think about it often. The value of a good question, I think, is sometimes underappreciated. Sometimes a good question can really cut through a lot of surrounding waffle. And while you were both talking, I was wondering if the fact that you don't have the physical assessment component, it, like you've been saying, there's a, that's a constraint that forces you to pay a lot more attention to the subjective. And in my experience, I find that students tend to rush through the subjective because they want to get hands-on, because it's the hands-on where I'm actually being a physiotherapist. And so, you know, this may be true in practice as well, but, you know, my experience has mainly been with students where there's kind of a rote kind of list of questions that they know that they need to get through, and they get through the questions, and now we're going to get to the real thing, which is the objective physical assessment. And I wonder if the what you're talking about, I wonder what it would look like if we said to students, you're not allowed to touch the patient. And so we actually, what would it look like if we added that constraint to training, even though we don't have to? If we say to the student, you're going to have half an hour to spend with this patient, and you're actually not allowed to touch them. You're not allowed to do a physical. And I wonder if that might change the nature of the interaction that they have. I wonder if they might be more thoughtful about the kinds of questions that they have. This isn't really a question. It was just something that was going through my mind as you were talking.
It's fascinating. I think that would be a really helpful experience. I think we're, this is a hot take, I think we're a misnamed profession. I think the focus on the physical is distracting from what's going to allow us to actually scale, help people more. I think physical matters, but it's downstream from something. And I think that's what a question does, is really you're just trying to understand what's this person's worldview and where's their attention going? Because that's basically what we're doing. We're realigning attention. I think most people usually have the answers. They usually know. They're good at listening to their body. But sometimes their focus is on the wrong thing. They might be focusing on the pain versus the thing that is causing the downstream pain, right? The behavior. And I think that is why this type of exercise would be so helpful for people, because it may help them realize that really the biggest lever we have is understanding them as a person, their role model. And kind of from there, you can kind of find the point at which you can kind of intervene and say, we should refocus our attention here. And that's a very hard thing. We're not taught to do that. Because like you said, everything's just so focused on the physical.
I think if you take away the physical and you focus just on the conversation, you may pay more attention there because it's all you have. You don't have the opportunity to fall back on the physical to try and identify the problem once you start taking the patient through those more practical assessment techniques. So just to change tack a little bit, actually completely, do you record the sessions? Because I'm just thinking while we're having this video conference, we're recording it, it's generating a transcript. And so, you know, if you recorded the session and auto-generated the transcript afterwards, you could then do some interesting analysis on those transcripts. And I'm just wondering if that's built into your platform, and if it is, what kind of reports are you getting that are auto-generated and how good those might be?
This is why I love talking to you, Michael. So few people are asking this. Short answer, no. Another short answer is looking into it. This is, I think, the biggest reason remote management should be way more common. Everything's digital. Everything's ready to be, you know, transcribed, and you're ready. You're in the perfect environment to apply AI agents. You're in the perfect environment to not ever have to worry about documentation again, because it'll be done automatically. You're in the perfect, you know, you can show people things online, right? You can just, everything's software these days, and this is software at the end of the day. And I would even say the real lever point of PT is that you're changing people's software, more or less, not just the physical, not the hardware. So I think there's a lot of relationships here that are really only can be done, or at least easier. They're done more easily in a remote environment. So yeah, we're looking into that stuff. It's here already. It's a little expensive. It, you know, has to fit into the workflow and everything. But I actually think we're pretty close to a day where you're not really going to be doing much documentation, which is, again, you're opening up more time. Do you see more patients, or do you have longer experiences with patients. It just, it affords more opportunities. So, but the short answer is no, we don't do that yet.
I'm sure it's inevitable. I mean, we've already got it built into Teams, and Teams is already generating summaries of meetings based on transcripts. So, I mean,
if, do you find it pretty useful, or do you think it's pretty accurate?
No. So the short answer is that it takes quite a bit of editing afterwards, just because there's so much variation. If it's just one person talking, then I think it does a really good job of the transcript. But in meetings where you tend to have kind of, you know, pauses and people talking over each other, different accents, different intonations, I think it can confuse it a little bit. But, you know, a year ago it didn't exist, and 6 months ago it was even worse, and tomorrow it'll be incrementally better. And, you know, the only direction of travel is that it keeps getting better. It never degrades performance. So I think it's only a matter of time before everything that we say in every context will just automatically be recorded and transcribed for our own personal records later. So I think we're heading in that direction. Sorry, Ben, you look like you might want to come in there.
Just really like that idea of moving towards a point where you'd be able to just record and then transcribe and summarize, you know, really, really, really quickly what the output was. I can imagine that being a real game changer just in terms of time and efficiency. As you say, once we're at the point where you could trust it and you didn't have to spend twice as long kind of going back through it to make sure that there weren't errors that were crept in through that process. What I was going to ask though was about kind of is all of your practice done through video calls? So kind of working in sort of telehealth and in an online space, do you also then alongside that have sort of text conversation? You know, do the other ways that people might communicate with you change in accordance with that role, or is it still pretty much, you know, sort of set time appointments that are synchronously happening face to face? You're just doing them online rather than in person.
This is a great question because I think it dovetails into something more important. We have text chats and we have video visits. That's pretty much it. Keeping it simple. Text chats hit or miss with some people. Some people love to text. Sometimes it's really nice to follow up with someone after, you know, we're going to meet in 3 weeks, but I kind of want to follow up. You know, they're pretty much close to self-management, which is just the word we call for, you know, for discharge. And, you know, we follow up with a quick text. It's super easy. There is a little bit of notification fatigue, I would say, as a provider once you get a lot of patients. But again, I don't think these are things that can't be solved with really intelligent software, to be honest. It's not here yet, but I think we're on the way. But what I think it dovetails into is what are the tools that we could have in a remote setting that we don't really have now? I think the education piece is going to be so huge, and this doesn't really exist yet. Education in any form the patient prefers, video, text, podcast. I see no reason why the content creation world in healthcare could suddenly take off, and now you have access to all of these things in addition to chatting with your provider. Like, the richness of that patient experience, I think, is going to explode. I think we're still pretty far away from that in terms of like year or two. I don't see that happening, but why can't we, you know, have certain specific apps for people to track, you know, track things? And it could just make everything so easy and integrated, I think, is the word. So super exciting. Again, you can do that in a clinic. It's harder though. In-person clinic.
How much do you find your practice changes so that it aligns with the default configuration of what the software allows? So you were talking now about tools that we don't yet have access to. If you could design a tool for this kind of practice, would it look like the tool that you have? Or do you think that there might be other ways that we could build software that might facilitate a more kind of patient-centered, human relational type thing? Because at the moment, you know, Microsoft designs a user interface that looks a certain way. And was that designed for kind of business meetings, or was it designed for patient-therapist relationships? What might it look like if it was designed with a different context in mind. I don't know if I'm making sense.
I'm gonna flip this on to you in a second, but I do have an answer, because I think one thing that a lot of people want are meeting notes, you know, appointment notes. I could immediately see that being kind of a default design that gets built into it, so people can kind of refer back. But I don't have a great answer for that. I would just say it's such basic video and it's such basic text that, you know, it allows for a lot, but also that's all it allows for. I think in the future, yeah, the design is going to be absolutely huge. And I have a lot of ideas there, having actually experienced this and, you know, treated patients and seen limitations and, you know, had moments where, you know, I did want to show a bit of an anatomical model, because people are interested in it. Little things like that, I think, could be built in. But I don't think it constrains things too much, to be completely honest. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm trying to read this paper called something. I don't know exactly the title, but it's something like, how do we build technology worthy of the human spirit? And it's kind of this idea that, you know, we have software developers who are trained in computer science who build software, and the kinds of software that they build might look different to the kind of software that a priest might build. I think they used like Students of Divinity as the example in the paper. And the suggestion is that we might get software that looks very different and feels very different if we had input from people who weren't computer scientists. And it's not a dig, you know, at computer scientists. You know, I think I obviously love the work that they do. Yeah. But might it look different? Might it feel different if there was input from, you know, spiritual advisors, philosophers? You know, I think that's the kind of thrust of the paper.
Yeah, I think absolutely. You know what I think would be required there? And I, you know, we're inching towards this, but I think you'd need some type of software agent, you know, meaning like an AI, that has its own agency in a sense. That doesn't exist yet today. I think we're moving in that direction, but that is where I think software is going, where software will be kind of built in the moment, more or less. I think that's kind of where it gets cool. Because when you have the ability to, you know, have an AI agent build its own software, and you know, we're not talking about ChatGPT here. This is a thing that I don't think exists yet. I think that's when the design gets really interesting. And you know, the possibilities kind of dovetail, but it's hard for me to imagine that now, because we don't really have anything close to that. I mean, like I do a little bit of software development, just to put up a very basic website. It is remarkable how much work goes into it. And yeah, it's relatively quick, but you know, in real time, absolutely no way. We're not even close to that.
So to bring us back from the utopian futurism that you might both be espousing here, how many people who you see like push back against this and are frustrated by the perceived limitations that they might have with kind of doing this stuff digitally?
I refer in person a pretty good amount. I'd say about 10 to 15% of the patients I see, I say, you'd be better served in person from my experience and what you're telling me. I often find they're in agreement, but at least they tried this, right? All they had to do is just pick up their phone and talk to someone. So I think from the patient perspective, you know, it's about that percent. You know, I just came from the US's, the American Physical Therapy Association's conference. And when I say I'm remote only, I mean, people are still looking at me like I have three heads, and which is surprising, just because we went through that whole COVID experience. Like, everyone experienced that, and it's just not changing is what I would say.
Well, that was actually one of the first things that I put down here was in relation to COVID. Do you think that's moved us closer to it or pushed us further away?
Yeah.
Because to me, from an education perspective, it feels like we just went through this like this massive wave of like, oh, okay, like the future's here, like, oh great, you know, like we were thinking about this before and now like we're all doing it, like we're never going to look back now, this is like entirely changed the game. And then like immediately it was like no, we've gone and we're not only gone back but we're like doubled down, and now it's like, oh, now there's all this scary AI stuff that's coming at us in education, so we've got to like put the barriers up against this and kind of keep it out. And it's like actually the fact that people got forced through that when they weren't ready, you know, and it was a cobbled together experience that wasn't, you know, designed and thought through and kind of everything else, then for a good chunk of people will have really turned them more, or made them more set against it or more just more skeptical of, about how it's going to go, right? So it, you know, is that the same thing in kind of telehealth that actually it may be that little taste that people had of an emergency response kind of phase has kind of convinced them that's what telehealth looks like and necessarily looks like, and so it's like, oh well, we couldn't do that all the time, obviously nobody was interested.
100%. I think that is definitely the idea. You know, it's interesting, I think what I think COVID did was it allowed people to experiment. I think that's more important than anything. And I think what's happening now is we're going through, you know, the Gartner hype cycle type of wave, right? You have the initial peak and then, we're in the trough of disillusionment. I think very slowly, things are going to start transitioning just because people want this. Patients want this. That's all that matters at the end of the day. They want it. The outcomes are there. Like we get the same outcomes, if not better. I don't have evidence to say they're better, but they're definitely not any worse. We have a lot of evidence coming out now for that. And I think the tools are only going to get better. And then I also think about I'm 3 years out of school. You know, I grew up with technology. The state of our profession today, at least in the U.S., is not ready for the future. It's simply not ready. I look at, you know, Gen Z and, you know, generations that have grown up with technology, you're going to need to meet them where they are. We're just not set up for that. And I think there's some cool experiments going on in social media with PTs or physios kind of giving stuff away, and they're getting very popular, and giving stuff away being information. I just think there's a whole future that we need to explore, and we're just the fact that we're stuck on telehealth not being telehealth is just physical therapy. It's physical therapy. It's just remote. The fact that we have to call it something, I think, is revealing in and of itself. It's not a bad thing. It's just revealing. So yeah, I'll get off my soapbox there, but yeah, people are still looking at me with three heads. So, that's why I appreciate you guys.
It's really interesting because I mean, there is equipment that physiotherapists use that, you know, we've had for 100 years. We've changed the materials that we use to build it. It looks slightly different. It's a little bit more ergonomic. But, you know, essentially some of the equipment that we use has been around for a very, very long time. And there does seem to be a reluctance in the profession to move in the direction of the digital. And when we do talk about digital, it's almost purely in terms of administrative, cost saving. So email is better than paper mail and faxes, and the electronic health record, you know, we can talk about whether or not it is better, but you could try to make the argument that the electronic health record is better than paper records. But essentially the way that we practice physiotherapy doesn't look very different to the way that it's been practiced for a very long time. And like, I'm really interested in what you're talking about. It seems like fundamentally different in my first kind of conception of it. But in talking to you now, I'm starting to drift more towards thinking maybe it's not so different at all. And I think that's kind of what you're saying, you know, this is just physiotherapy. That's been an interesting kind of change in the way that I think about it.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest part when I speak to people. It's, you could do this. You don't need training. You don't need any special training. What you do need to be more aware of is that there are people who are simply not, you know, fit for telehealth, for remote physical therapy. Physiotherapy. I gotta keep saying that. I think like fall risks, right? A classic example. Your intuition is gonna push them to be in person. They're just not appropriate for remote. So I think little things like that are the roadblocks that are blocking people right now, which is, it's just kind of mind blowing to me, because This is an opportunity here to really scale what we do. And I think the issue is there's a rift between what we do in the profession. I think what we do is very different than what people think. And I listening to this podcast, I think you guys are really asking good questions and having good conversations about kind of getting to that essence. And and telehealth, remote care, it just facilitates it just in a different way, and it allows it to be scalable. I think it's central to us growing as a profession. So
you said something there that just made me think. I was going to ask, how does education need to change? How does professional training need to change to take this into account? And you were just saying you don't think that you need special training. You don't really think that we need to do anything different, but maybe just change the emphasis on what we talk about. So instead of having as much emphasis on the kind of practical, you know, objective physical assessment, is the shift in emphasis in a different direction?
Yeah, I kind of want you to keep riffing there, because yes, I think we need to move away from the objective, because that's going to be automated, I think, right? I have a computer vision thing that just measures my range of motion, you know, without me, I don't have to click anything, right? It can do it from start to finish, right? Done. What matters more is kind of asking that good question and connecting with someone. I think that is where things should go. And that is not how education is set up. You got to pass boards or whatever you need to do to get the license, and the boards determine everything, and the boards are, you know, you have to teach towards that. So I understand it. So I think where they need to change, I think this expansion of what it means to be a PT and a therapist in general, I think is a really good starting point, because I think that kind of lends itself to this idea that it is their mental model that you need to really understand. And kind of, you have a certain understanding, you need to kind of meet them somewhere and almost not realign, but just align them relative to where they're trying to get. That's such a broad way of saying, like, just follow their goals and really learn about them as a human, which that could be like any other profession. If you were listening to that, you could make the argument that could be for any service-based profession, which is where it kind of goes back to, like, the profession is kind of flattening in that sense. I do think there should be a hands-on part of the profession. I just don't think it should be central. But I think at the end of the day, everyone's different, and whatever is going to kind of help someone get to their goal. For some people, they need that hands-on care. It kind of brings them back to homeostasis, so their nervous system isn't freaking out in some way. For other people, it's just understanding that, there's not actual damage in my back per se. It's more of something that I just kind of need to move through, for lack of a better term right now. And how do you prepare students for this type of world where it is going to shift away from that? I think you need more experiential learning opportunities. That's where education needs to go versus this assembly line approach, right? Where you're just kind of getting ready to do a job and you're a mechanic. You're not a mechanic. That's going to be software, I think.
No, I really like the idea, and it's probably a good point to start wrapping on. This idea that we kind of shift our emphasis back to the relationship, between people. And I think, like, you know, what you've been saying, Ben, is that that's what a lot of patients want. They want to feel heard. They want someone to ask them good questions. And I think that's something that we don't spend a lot of time on, because we have this emphasis on the physical. And what might education look like if we kind of downgraded the emphasis on the physical assessment and, you know, spend more time, you know, I know that this is difficult given other constraints, you know, with, you know, health systems wanting people to spend less time with patients and service users. But, you know, might we get better at asking questions and get better at having conversations, to the point where we can form some of those connections and relationships in less time? Maybe we're just really inefficient at getting to the crux of what someone's challenges are.
Yeah, and I also, to add on to that, it's easy for me to say this right now, because at the end of the day, it's you know, we fit into a bigger system, and that system fits into a bigger system. So, you know, it needs to make money at the end of the day, or at least like fit into some economic model. And that's very hard when, you know, you're just trying to do something where you're just trying to create a relationship with someone. How do you measure that is something that I think is going to be very difficult. And, you know, that's where, you know, our focus on outcomes has allowed us to be accepted in the medical world. And I don't see that going away anytime soon. So, you know, I guess the middle ground is having more time to focus on this objective and build these relationships, like you're saying. I think that's probably the best step for now. And that's why I'm so grateful for my current position, because they give us that time.
Cool. Well, that's a really good note to end on. Ben, did you have anything else that you wanted to chip in with?
No, I'm not going to open another question track now. It's, thanks. I've enjoyed the chat and the conversation. So yeah, thanks.
Cool. Thank you so much, Ben. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me on. It was nice talking to you guys.